My name is Gianni Russo, a.k.a. Carlo, the infamous son-in-law from The Godfather. I'm now known as the Hollywood Godfather, and this is my story.
Before all of the wins in my portfolio, I was a little boy diagnosed with polio. Experimenting with cures, I tried every one. Felt everything in my right, but my left was numb. Walking with a limp, like will I ever run? Once again, or is this it? Am I forever done? Living in the hospital was never fun. Some people were cool, but not everyone.
Welcome, everybody. It's time for another Hollywood Godfather podcast. And I can't believe we're approaching 300 episodes. And I got to thank you personally before my co-hosts come on. You've kept us alive. We want to grow. Send the cards and letters. We need you. All your input. Let me bring Jeannie on, the prettier one of the whole group. Jeannie Raymond, how are you?
Hi, everybody. So nice to be here. Yes, from Utah. I don't know how I got involved with this. People keep saying, how on earth do you know Gianni Russo? And I'm like, you know.
Don't tell him.
Yeah, keep him guessing. That's right, Gianni. That's right. Have him wondering. But
our new co-host, I can't believe he contacted us, which to me is so amazing. Yet people are asking me, how did you guys program this? You're the Hollywood Godfather, and he's the Hollywood Kid, which I was the kid for a long time for Costello. Yeah. None other than my man Mike. How you doing, bud? The Hollywood Kid.
All right, Johnny, another great show tonight. So we're rolling right now. We're booking some great guests. We've got some great shows coming up. As always, you know, subscribe on YouTube, guys. Real Talk with the Hollywood Kid or the Hollywood Godfather podcast. The show drops every Wednesday, early Wednesday mornings. So, you know, your family, your Jamie, our guest, all your subscribers can check it out. So we're doing very well. And we need audience participation. That's what we're looking forward to having, is a lot more audience participation. Send us your letters. Send us your emails. They're up at HollywoodGodfatherPodcast.com. Check us out. And again, Johnny, we got a great guest tonight. This guy, Jamie Duvall. I'm going to give him a nice introduction here, if we don't mind. Hey, guys, here we go. In the early hours of February 12th, 1977, aspiring actress Krista Helm was brutally murdered in West Hollywood in front of her friend's house, stabbed more than 20 times in the upper chest and facial area. Her murder has often been referred to as the Black Dahlia of the disco era. Many in her circles knew that Krista made no secret that she had a diary and audio sex tapes with some of the most powerful names in Hollywood and would use them as blackmail if ever needed. On today's show,
that'll get you killed.
Yeah, right there. Right.
On today's show, we will be taking a deep dive into the murder of Krista Helm, a murder that still remains a mystery 47 years after her death. Our guest this week, Jamie Duvall, is an expert on the murder of Krista Helm and is currently writing a book about her tragic life and death. Jamie also hosts a popular podcast called Movie Geeks United, a movie-themed podcast featuring insightful film discussion and interviews. Jamie Duvall, thanks for coming on the show this afternoon.
Thank you very much. It's my honor and pleasure. Thank you.
How are you doing? All right?
I'm pretty good. How you been?
Good. So for a lot of our audience who don't know Krista Helm and what happened to her, I know that 48 Hours did an expose on her a few years back. Give a brief description of her and her background, if you can.
Well, her story encompasses a lot of the glamour and the vice of 70s New York City and L.A. And a lot of side characters in her life, some cultural iconoclasts included in that. But her life began a lot more modestly. She grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, born in 1949. Her parents divorced when she was very young. She stayed with her mother and her sisters for a time, and her mother was an alcoholic and abusive to the children. Some of the boyfriends that her mother brought into the home were abusive to the kids as well, including sexually, as I've heard. But she dreamt of a bigger life than the Midwest could offer her. So she really wanted to be a star. At 17, she got pregnant by a man twice her age named Gary Clements. And they got married. The day after their wedding, he split. And she heard later that he had died in a motorcycle accident. So now she has a baby, really limited prospects where she is. So she decides this is the time I have to pursue my dream so I can make a better life for myself and my daughter. So she knew someone who agreed to be a nanny and look after her daughter for a while until Krista got back up on her feet and became established. And she moved to New York City. And that's really where the kind of the glitz and glamour and the tragedy of her life takes hold.
Now, can I interject something?
Sure.
Is that picture behind you so our audience knows?
That is, yeah. I figured I have a huge TV back there. I might as well do something with it. So that's her photo.
I just wanted to clarify because I don't know who she is either. It's nice to put a picture with a story.
Absolutely, yes. And she was stunning. She was beautiful.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I can understand why people want to be with her.
Farrah Fawcett-esque.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she is stunning.
And that was the decade of Farrah Fawcett, and that kind of look was very in demand. Yeah. But that's where her odyssey really begins in New York City.
One of the first people that she meets was a wealthy gentleman named Stuart Duncan. Who was Stuart Duncan?
Stuart Duncan was an heir to the Worcestershire family, the Lee and Perrins.
Lee and Perrins, yeah.
Yeah, and he was set to become established in that company like his family before him, but he just didn't have it in his blood. What was in his blood was the theater. And so he started producing a lot of theatrical productions, and the one that hit fairly early on was Godspell. And so he became pretty popular and wealthy in his own right just from the theater productions. And he met Krista and became generally her largest benefactor throughout her life. I mean, he was a sugar daddy is what we call him now for Krista. He put her up in a townhouse in New York City, got her a car, had her a place in the Hamptons that she would go to occasionally. And then when she moved to LA, he hooked her up with a house in LA and he produced.
Generous guy. That's great.
Very generous. And he actually produced a movie for her. She starred in her own feature film that was shot in Haiti in 1973. Stuart changed her life big time.
That was the year after we did The Godfather.
That's right.
So what year was that? Did you say 73? 73. 73, sorry.
And Godfather, you shot that in what, 71 probably?
71, released in 72. Yeah.
Yeah. God.
What a beauty. So she had a daughter, you said, and a little bit of what I was hearing was she left her with someone until she was 10 years old, until she was able to attend. She was going to bring her with her, but didn't want her trailing along until that point, right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. She knew the kind of environment that she was probably going to have to rub shoulders with was not suitable for a young child. But they spent quite a bit of time together. She would vacation. She would visit her mother in New York City. Her mother would visit her, take her back home to Milwaukee. There was constant communication. But the deal was, I'll give it until, if I don't make it in these intervening years, I'll give it 10 years. When you're 10 years old, you can come be with me in this environment because I think you'd be better prepped for it.
Now, with the lady that was raising her, did you hear about any abuse or that? Was she being kind to her or not?
It's funny because a big part of her story, and I didn't realize this at the beginning of the process, but in the process of writing this book, it really is about a cycle of abuse that goes through generations. Whoa. And how it impacts people. Because unbeknownst to Krista, her daughter Nicole was suffering similar abuses from that nanny, and she was not aware of it. So there's a real kind of journey that Krista's story takes that even Krista wasn't aware of.
What a shame. I mean,
yeah.
It's so funny because my situation with Marilyn Monroe, the last 5 years of her life, to hear some of her stories, it's heart-wrenching to see what the people who took advantage of her. The old history of the casting couch in California. If you want to make it, get on your back. It's crazy.
You know, it's a terrible, haunting thing, but it gives me such empathy for Krista. And I think this is a major part of her story that's missing, because people focus in on the salaciousness of, oh, she slept with all these famous people to get to the top. It's that whole stereotypical Hollywood starlet getting to the top and she pays the ultimate price. A lot of people tell the story that way, but this is a girl that suffered this kind of abuse at a young age. And she came to a point where she decided to use her sexuality for her own kind of purposes. She took control of her sexuality.
Well, that's what Marilyn did. That's what a lot of them did. They had to. They
realized they're going
to be abused, so why not use it?
And it was right in line with the women's movement that erupted in the early 70s. I mean, it was the time when this kind of behavior was in the air, when this kind of movement was in the air.
Well, you know, if they knew that was the way to do it, you got to hand it to her for knowing, you know, I'm going to take my daughter out of this environment and leave her behind until I can kind of get my feet under me, make a name for myself, and then I'll bring her around, because she knew what she had in store for her, you know.
And I don't want to make it sound like she was without talent, because she was talented, and she worked really hard at improving her acting and singing. She took constant lessons, I've been told, and she was very diligent about, you know, putting her best foot forward professionally. It wasn't just a matter of who can I hook up with to get me this opportunity. She was a mover and a shaker. She had a calendar.
She needed the talent. You can only go so far on the sexual comedy.
Now, Jamie, how did you get involved with this story?
Well, back in 2007, I started my own podcast called Movie Geeks United, and very few people knew what a podcast was back then. I didn't really even know, but
explain to us what it is.
I describe podcasts as? I said to somebody one day, I go, you know, a podcast is like we've gone back in time. Because everyone used to sit around the radio and listen to the stories.
That's exactly.
Here we are.
You know, there were publicists and agents who didn't know what a podcast was at the time. And that's exactly how I describe it. I said it's like a radio show on the internet.
Well, and the other thing that what I find out when I meet people on the street, fortunately, that tune into us, we have such a large following, they love the idea of the convenience. You could tune in when you want. People don't want to be regimented. At 8 o'clock, you got to turn it on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We have 250 something hours up.
Exactly.
We get fans to say, I'm only up to 30. I can't, I'm binge listening.
Hey, that's exactly right. I gotta tell you guys, I started as a fan. I don't know how I got here, but I started as a fan, and I have literally gone through, tried to find podcasts, but I've started it over and listened to it all over again, because Gianni's stories are so fantastic and I love listening to them. And that is the convenience of doing this. You can turn it on at any time and you don't have to worry about recording it or anything like that. It's just always with you.
That's right. And believe me, I've listened to hours and hours and hours of Gianni as well. He's been a nonstop source of enjoyment and entertainment for me. So it's a pleasure to be on with him. But when I started the podcast, it was it was exotic, because there wasn't a lot like that out there at that time. So I got a lot of luck procuring guests like Coppola and Cameron and Jennifer Lawrence and all kinds of people.
Francis Ford Coppola on.
In the first year.
How'd you arrange that? That's a coup.
I just reached out. I found that I didn't tell myself that I couldn't. So I reached out and asked, and there they were.
Yes, you can, right, Gianni? Sorry, Gianni.
Well, that's it.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
Yes, you can, man. 81 years.
So I just ended the podcast last year. It has over 1800 filmmaker interviews in the archives. It's a big, big thing. But in 2000,
stopped doing it now.
I did, yeah, because I'm focused solely on the book. I might go back, but I feel like I've done it. 16 years I've done it. But in 2014, I did an offshoot of that podcast about true Hollywood crime. And I was looking for a story that wasn't the typical Manson, that kind of thing. And I found that episode of 48 Hours on Krista. And that intrigued me because I never heard of it before. And it had so much flavor to it and side avenues that were fascinating. And so I brought on her daughter, the original detective, the cold case detective, some friends of Krista's. And that's where my kind of obsession with the story began. And I felt like something I never felt before. I'm not an amateur sleuth. I have no lofty ambitions to be that, but I thought that I could do some good because I found some new information about our case at that time. And so I've pursued it for the 10 years since and uncovered a lot of stuff that the detectives never even found out. So I'm continuing on my quest to find more answers for it.
And who's your interest right now? Publishers, TV producers? Who are you trying to attract?
You know, publishers, eventually. The book is maybe 75% there. It's so difficult because a book is different from, you know this, it's different from a general timeline of events. That's a Wikipedia page. A book is about the details.
Oh, yeah.
Every single little morsel of observation you can get from the people in her life. So to bring that life to fruition on the page. So it's been a big thing because Krista wasn't famous, but she knew a lot of people. So to track down those people, that's been the major time spender right there.
But are they still alive?
Many of them are, but there's people that I've been trying to get to talk to me for the past 10 years and we're running out of time. I mean, one of those people just died on Saturday.
Her name.
His name was Stephen Grise. He was a musician bandmate of Krista's towards the end of her life, and I never got to speak with him. But there's maybe 20 others that I haven't spoken to, and I've spoken to about 100 people so far. So,
wow.
That's amazing.
You have a publisher yet?
Not yet. I haven't shopped it yet, but it's coming soon. It's coming this year.
So what's your day job? What's keeping you alive?
I'm a writer. For the past 18 years, I've been a copywriter in the medical industry. So I write press releases, magazines, all that kind of thing for the medical industry.
Well, what a diversion that is. I mean, from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah.
Life and death on the other end.
That's true. And it's been so funny because over the years I've been at work and I've taken my lunch break and I would say, I got to go on my lunch break. I got to interview Robert Duvall. I'll be right back. So, and now I'm like, I got to talk to this person about this unsolved murder. So I've always kind of had a double life with my coworkers. Yeah.
Well, you seem happy. Are you married?
No. That might explain why I'm happy. Yeah, not married.
Happy.
I'm kidding.
Jamie, let's talk a little bit about when she went out to L.A. How did her life change when she started growing? I mean, I know she was doing Starsky and Hutch episodes. Mm-hmm. She made a movie. Yeah. Like, broke.
Well, she went to L.A. because she felt like that was the place to be after she did her movie. She was waiting for her movie to get distribution, which it never did, really.
Was she the only star in it?
She was, well, yeah, she was unknown. I mean, she was the feature actress in it, but she was unknown. In terms of big names, there was a little supporting part played by Eddie Egan, the French Connection. Sure. You know, they got him because they filmed some of it in Miami, most of it in Haiti. And I've seen it. It's not widely available. I've seen the movie and she's good in it. There were worse movies that played the drive-in circuit in the 70s. So I think if it had been given a chance.
That's not a good comparison.
That should be on the poster. There are worse movies. I think if it were given a chance, it would have a niche. It would find a niche audience.
So what do you think is keeping you alive and your energy alive? And where are you going to go with this? I mean, that's the end. At the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
get rewarded for all your effort to bring the attention to this lady, which she deserves, obviously.
Well, the reward would be resolution, some form of resolution for her case, because I've gotten very emotionally invested in her and her daughter's story. Her daughter wants answers badly. And so I would love to see some sort of point where we can say to ourselves, yeah, that's probably what happened. I mean, I'm not a detective. I don't have the power to arrest anyone, but or close a case officially. But the book is, I'm writing a book because I thought, you know, if I have all this research material, hundreds and hundreds of pages, if something happens to me, all this research just dies on my computer.
Well, so are you working with the daughter though, aren't you?
I'm in her. Yeah, I've spoken to her many times. I've met her in New York City, and she showed
How
me around.
Old is she now?
She was born in 67. So I didn't realize I'd have
56.
To do math in the show.
56.
Yes, and she.
I'm a
mathist.
Not really.
That's very good.
56. Wow.
And she's a grandmother. I mean, she's, you know, and one of her grandkids is named Krista. So it's her story. It's really inspiring, actually, how she empowered herself and how she's living now and the life that she's enjoying now. But there's always this gnawing question, this wound about her mother.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I have a friend whose mother was murdered, and there's someone that keeps baiting them, saying, oh, let me out, take me somewhere, I'll tell you where her body is. And it's gone back and forth, and there's just,
I mean, people take advantage of people like that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They just arrested a guy taking $75,000. The lady in the Bahamas, remember her daughter?
They couldn't. Oh, Holloway, Natalie, yeah. Holloway. Yeah, he
that
was saying, "I'll pay me, and I'll tell you."
Well, to be honest with you, that's a big part, a stumbling block in the process of writing this book and doing this research, because that's why it's taken years to get some people to talk to me, because they have to realize that my intentions aren't gutter deep, you know, that I actually have good intentions with this. I want to put some empathy into her story and really find the concrete answers to it.
Is it a cold case, or what do they categorize it at this point?
Well, the original investigators in 1977 failed to get much headway on the case. And I'm sure Mike's going to ask me some questions about the actual case. And then her daughter reached out to the LA Sheriff's Department in mid-2000s, and they picked it up again for a few years. And now both of those detectives have retired. So this case is gathering dust at the Sheriff's Department archives for a while now.
But the jurisdiction is California, where it happened.
It is LA. It is within the Sheriff's Department's
You're
jurisdiction.
Going to get nothing done. I can tell you that.
I know.
I have more evidence of, unfortunately, with the Blondie special on Netflix, it just came out and they verified a lot of things I put in my book about Marilyn Monroe. So you can imagine an unknown celebrity, they're not going to go after it at all.
And I don't get it. I don't get it, because I guarantee if I match what I've learned this decade with what they have in their files, there's probably answers there. I mean, we could really work up something. But their inability to share anything when they're not touching the case otherwise, it's just sitting there. Right. Even her daughter deserves to know the information in those files, those cold case files.
But
you
the
know,
problem,
Jamie,
is there's tens of thousands of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Where do you start?
Yeah, and the one thing is, and I'm an avid podcast listener, and there's Truth and Justice. There's so many great Up and Vanish that have brought cases back to life and gotten the cases solved after all these years. So maybe your interest in your kicking up some stuff will bring something around. So
I hope so. I mean, I'm not one of those people that, there's an unsolved murder, I got to get on it. This is the only thing I've been focused on for a decade. I'm
for
serious about this. Yeah.
So how old was the little gal, the daughter what was her name?
Nicole. Her daughter was 9 when her mother was killed. So she was months away from that time when she was going to stay with her mother. And her mother told her right before she was killed, her mother told her, I'm leaving California early so we can start a life together back in Milwaukee. And even asked her if she wanted a brother or a sister. So she was so close to that magical kind of time when that would happen, but she didn't get it.
I mean, we're gonna get into the night that she was murdered. But yeah, obviously, I mean, it's like almost a cliche nowadays when an older cold case crime, 1977, we're talking. I mean, nowadays, obviously, there's DNA. Are there any samples? Do they have anything like, you know, fiber or anything? Clothing?
They found tissue under her nails in 77, the medical examiner. And so he clipped the nails and saved them. So when the cold case cops picked it up in the mid-2000s, they said, well, this is the first place we're going to go. We're going to go DNA. Took 3 years to get the results back. And they came back female. So
hold that thought. We're going to make a few dollars.
I was just about to
come right back. And we know where you live. Remember that. In fact, I'll do the commercial myself.
Sounds great.
I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. On April 13th and 14th in Ridgefield, New Jersey, at the Double Bay Hilton, they're having their first PaisanoCon. Go to PaisanoCon website, find out about who's going to be there. I mean, they got more Italians now, and they even got that young kid from the Giants coming. I love that kid.
Vito, Tommy DeVito.
Yeah, this kid, I hope he gets better handlers because this kid should be a big star. But anyway, it's PaisanoCon. Go to the website, April 13th and 14th. I'll be there with a lot of other, there'll be a lot of oil and garlic in the room. I promise you that.
Me from South Philly here. I'm going to tell you, I had one of the best Sunday dinners in a long time. I'm going to tell you why. Right here. Corleone, fine Italian, brother. This stuff is the real deal. Now, I know what you're thinking. Everybody knows me out there. They know I make my own sauce. I make my own gravy. I make my own pasta. I don't buy this stuff in the store. However, I made an exception. Why? Because my friend Johnny Russo out there, I know what he's capable of doing. I know what he's about. He's about quality. So I said, I got to take a shot. And I'm glad I did. Because, see, I've had dinner all over the world. But this one, this product, brings me back to Italy. We got the olive oil. And I've lived in Italy. Okay, I lived in Calabria. I've went to Sicily. I've been in Messina. I've been to Palermo. I've been everywhere. And this oil reminds me of an old Italian couple that my father used to buy olive oil from. They used to live in the mountains and they used to make their oil pure from their own olive grove. This is it. It brings me right back to that. And you don't need a lot. You put a little bit on your salad, you marinate. You can figure it out. This is the real stuff. I also got their arrabbiata, okay? Again, I don't buy this stuff, but I made an exception. I'm glad I did. I highly, highly, highly encourage you to try this stuff. You won't be sorry, okay? Give it a shot. You go to Corleone Fine Italian. You order it. It comes to the door. And then all we got to do is put it together. And I'm sure you can look it up. And if you don't know how to cook it, you ask me. And I'll be over for dinner. Enjoy. Salute.
Yep.
All right, we're back to this interesting story. And our guest, Mr. Duvall, please.
We were talking about the DNA. Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, so the sample came back belonging to a female. That doesn't necessarily mean that the killer was female. She lived with a woman. She drove that woman's car that night. She might have been intimate with a female earlier in the night. So there could be other explanations for why there was tissue under her nail that night.
Well, unless she was scratching her back, I don't know how it would be there.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
So she was attending a party that night with her roommate, Stephanie. And while she was at that party, apparently she saw something that spooked her because she came back to her roommate at the party and she had a look on her face like, very ashen, frightened look. And her roommate said, "What's wrong?" And Krista didn't respond. But her roommate was there with a boyfriend, and they were going to go to the beach that weekend right after the party. So they were going to take his car to do that. So the roommate offered Krista her car for the night. Krista left in her roommate's car, went to the home of a man named Sandy Smith. He was a music agent. Nobody knows why she went there. She walked out of the car. Before she reached the door, she was confronted by someone, a killer or killers, and she was stabbed 22 times in the back, in the front, bludgeoned in the face, crack in her skull. It was overkill in the middle of the night, 1:30 in the morning, in a residential street in West Hollywood. There was lots of screaming. Some people looked out their window and didn't see anything. There was one woman that looked out and her vision was obscured by shrubs. So it was a risky murder. It took a long time because Krista was really fighting back, and there could have been many, many witnesses. I mean, it was risky.
That's interesting. I want to ask you, Jamie. Chris's friend Darlene, who never spoke to police until now, she sent her girlfriend Darlene a postcard. We talk about like a lot of bad actors involved here. Some stuff you said, some maybe she saw something she wasn't supposed to see. She the postcard read that I'm in a way over my head here. I'm into something I can't get out of. Does that
Yeah,
ring?
she, Krista was killed in February 77. Darlene says this postcard arrived around the holiday, Christmas time, 76. And that's exactly what it says. I'm in over my head. I might need you to watch Nicole for a while, without further explanation. So when Krista was first killed, and Darlene is her childhood friend from Milwaukee, Darlene thought maybe she's in witness protection. She didn't believe for the longest time that her friend had actually been murdered. But there was a lot. The thing about this case, there are six or seven different theories that are all possible. It's usually a case you can look at this clue or this clue and say, oh, it's either one or the other. But this one, I mean, she was involved with a very dangerous guy. His name was David Stein. He's also known as David Marcus and David the Pimp. And
The
I've talked
last
to,
name is probably the one that got her in trouble.
well, I've talked to, they were inseparable during her time in LA. And I've talked to about 12 people that knew this guy, and he's bad news. I mean, death and destruction really followed him in his wake anywhere he went.
Where is
So,
he now? Is he alive yet, or was he?
according to his brother, and this took me 5 or 6 years to find him, according to his brother, he died just 2 years ago. So I just missed him, which is just my luck.
We're talking 1977, the 70s, a lot of cocaine around LA, New York, all over the country, the party time. Rudy Mazzella was another shady character.
Yes. He was kind of lower level drug dealer. And Krista stayed with him and his wife for a time. They were close. He had a big party house, a big social house. And she actually, according to Rudy's widow, she actually Krista wrote was writing her book in his house at the time of her murder. So Krista would write all of her encounters with famous people or otherwise, I guess, on like a rating system in a book. And she would always kind of hold up the book and say, or in a diary, and she'd hold it up and say, I'm going to write this into a book and it's going to make me $1 million, which she was pretty much ahead of her time back then because people eventually did that. But she was writing that book in Rudy's house. So the
That's a
night,
death wish in itself.
yeah, the night that Krista was killed, Rudy's wife claims that someone broke into their garage and only stole the pages of that book and Krista's other belongings.
And guess who it was? The wife.
I don't know. I mean, his wife told me a lot of other stuff that I kind of question because she said that Krista used to brag about sleeping with Richard Nixon, and I don't know. I don't know. I can't imagine that. But
You bring up, I don't want to bring it up, but how did she supposedly slept with the Shah of Iran?
yes. That was in the early 70s.
Well, that's bullshit because I know him personally.
Oh, did you really?
Oh, very religious man. I took his money out in the last 24 hours before the Khomeini took over. I took $85 million into the country for him.
Gianni, oh, I'm going to start setting a timer as to how long it takes for you to have a link or have a thread into some of these people. We have not had a topic where all of a sudden Gianni didn't have something. That's amazing. But
Well,
tell me
he was
about.
he there have been a lot of biographers that have written books about his life too. And I mean, he was a major one of the big clients of a madam in Paris, I think. And he sent a representative also to New York City, and they actually
But the
recruited.
high end, not
Yes.
they are not talking street language, believe me.
Yeah. But they also yeah, this madam in Paris, I forget what her name is. They made a movie about her on Netflix. She serviced heads of state, dignitaries,
Exactly.
the biggest of the big. But there was also a representative of the Shahs that came to New York City and actually spoke to Krista. It wanted Krista to gather some female friends because the Shah apparently liked women who were Midwestern, blonde, and milk-fed.
Well,
That was.
the biggest, that whole crew, just so you know, Adnan Khashoggi was handling all that.
Okay.
Adnan had a couple of girls who were pimps, girls who were
Right.
recruiting these people. And they were getting tremendous amount of money. And they groomed them, they dressed them, and they were like a harem. I had Adnan's 50th birthday at my club in Vegas.
Oh,
And
wow.
Casinos, because he's such a big player. For our audience who don't know who he was, he's probably one of the best known arms dealers in the world. And I was a courier and got involved with him, and I knew him really well. And Bob Shaheen, who was his fiduciary, and I moved millions of dollars for them all over the world. And we released it once they inspected. In fact, I remember a funny story. They sold a nuclear submarine to a major enemy of this country. And we were all in Switzerland. He does the inspection of the submarine, and he okays it, and we make the wire transfer like in a movie. He okays it.
Wow.
They start signaling it, and the movie's all moved. And then we're in the car, and they're calling back, and he said, "There's no nuclear warheads on this thing." And Adnan said, "Well, you didn't buy nuclear warheads. You bought a submarine."
Oh my
Wow.
I mean, and I knew that group really well. I mean, fortunately, because we traveled all over the world together. We were in the same circles at that time. And I kept my boat in Monaco, and they used it so many times for big money.
Wow.
But no, so this girl was really traveling in high circles.
She went to she met the Shah in Tehran. She met him in Switzerland. She got a lot of jewelry and crystals and gifts from him.
That's probably why she was killed.
That's another one of the theories. Yeah. And there's also a theory
She was
there's
going public.
yeah, but she went public to the media about the Shah in 73. 4 years before she was killed. But there's also the notion that I've heard rumors that the CIA might have recruited some women to spy on the Shah at the time. And if I'm generally not a conspiracy guy, but there are crazier things that the CIA would do. It makes sense. I mean, you have women that spend time in the Shah's company. They want to know something about his personal private space. That would be the ideal person to recruit.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, pillow talk, big thing. I wrote a book called Pillow Talks, and it's using high-end prostitutes to infiltrate anything or anybody you want.
Sure.
It
And
works.
yeah, so that's yet another theory, the Shah connection, the David Marcus, the who was a high-end, he was a high-end madam, really, a male madam. He supplied girls to really wealthy clients, like possibly the Shah. And he would use girls to kind of set up a lot of the rich clients too. So if Krista saw something or did something she shouldn't have, that would be another theory.
Makes sense. It does make sense. She saw
Oh, it makes a lot of sense.
And these weren't.
I'm hoping for you that you get a resolve out of this. I mean, you've got a lot of time and effort in it, and so far, no benefit.
Yeah, I mean, but I've traveled to Milwaukee and New York City and California, and I've gone to a bunch of different places to look into this. It's kind of like an adventure,
Yeah,
and
but you're keeping it as a sport or a hobby. It's great, but if you mostly.
it's stuck with me. It's just something that I have to exercise, I think. I got to find closure.
There are tons of plot twists and there's some interesting characters in this whole scenario. One of the interesting characters, back in 1977, an aspiring actor, Tony Sirico, was involved in this. Tell the audience how he was involved with this.
Yeah, this is an odd connection. Krista's best friend in
Second. For our audience who don't know who Tony Sirico was, it was Paulie Walnuts in The Sopranos. Sorry, go ahead.
and prior to becoming an actor, Tony had ties to the Columbo crime family under Persico, I think.
No, he did under Junior.
Yeah,
No,
and he spent a lot of
but
time.
he was a street drug dealer. Tony was a convicted drug dealer.
Yeah.
They liked him and they brought him in there. I knew him of him, but I mean, and then he got, and then he became an actor. All these people are coming out of the woodwork. I love it.
Yeah, there's a lot of characters in Krista's story. So Krista's best friend in New York City and LA was a guy named Bernie Corn. No, not Bernie Kornfeld. I'm so sorry. Was a guy named Lenny Barron. There's so many names in the story, I get confused. Lenny Barron was a costume designer. He was a Wonder Woman's costume designer, Judy Garland's costume designer, very popular, like a toast of New York City. Everybody loved him. He hosted all these parties. He and Tony Sirico were inseparable. Which
Really?
seems like strange
Yeah.
partners, really. But so the night Krista was killed, it was said that Lenny and Tony went to her apartment and took all of her furs and jewelry, all of her belongings from the apartment.
Wow.
So Tony was interviewed by cold case detectives in the mid-2000s. He said, "Yeah, I don't really remember Krista. Maybe I knew her vaguely."
Uh-oh.
And then the cops asked him, "Do you remember where you were that night?" And then he got a lawyer and he shut up. So he didn't say anything else after that. No one could get a peep from him. But I've just found out he obviously knew Krista because Krista's best friend was Lenny Barron. Lenny Barron was Tony Sirico's best friend at the time. When Krista's sister went to Lenny Barron's house the morning after, Lenny Barron told her sister, Krista has been killed. The only other person in that apartment at the time was Tony Sirico. He was there sitting on Krista's lavender couch in Lenny's apartment. So he knew her. But unfortunately, he wouldn't
He's
say
not a
anything.
killer, though. I
No,
wouldn't
but
kill the killer.
even not looking for the killer, that doesn't rule him out as somebody that might know something.
Oh no, obviously he knows something, but I'm saying
Yeah.
to say he killed her, I wouldn't, go that far.
Yeah, I haven't ID'd a killer, and I make sure people know. Look, I'm not
He's dead
saying
now too, right? He died
yes,
recently, yeah.
yes. I spent years trying to get something out of him, but to no avail.
He had dementia towards the end, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Gianni, you are the furthest thing from dementia because you've got a brain like a steel trap.
That's
Oh,
true.
I've had dementia several times in front of judges.
Of course. We've got a my friend Dondra and I at work. The our favorite saying is what me? No, I was at church. I
I was at church, okay.
was at church. I don't know anything.
So she pulls up to the house 9020 Lloyd Place. Okay, we usually see these TV shows and somebody's getting followed, they get chased, they turn the tire into the curb, but the tires were placed weird. It almost gave the effect that she was being chased by somebody, which is
Yeah, that's what the cops say. And it goes back to the her being spooked at the party. Did someone follow her from that party to the house? Because she was parked pretty erratically onto a curb right in front of that house. But she had no drugs in her system or alcohol. So it wasn't a drunken kind of drive. So the police were not able to identify anyone at that party who might have spooked her. There's also another theory, and it's probably the leading theory behind her murder. Towards the end of her life, she was creating a disco album because she sang also. She hooked up with this famous DJ called Frankie Crocker. He was big in New York City and he was staying in LA at the time. And he agreed to produce a disco album for her. So she gathered a group of musicians together and they were recording this album. And there's a lot of dysfunction in the studio. She had a backup singer by the name of Patty Collins. They started a relationship. Everybody who met Patty Collins said that she was unpleasant, extremely jealous. If anyone came up and spoke to Krista, you could see Patty glaring at you from across the room. Then, after Krista was killed, Patty Collins disappeared. Cops haven't been able to find her whereabouts for 47 years.
Maybe she's dead too.
It could be. And it's such a common name, it's hard to track down a Patty Collins and but I've tried. I think I found her yearbook photo from the 60s, and I've contacted every person who's still alive in her class from her yearbook photo and reached out to them. I mean, I've gone to great lengths to try to find out who this Patty Collins is.
It sounds like you're really, this you're embedded in this.
Yeah, it's been
Thank God you're not married. She should leave you.
it's...
That is wild.
So Patty Collins is one. There's another one, another backup singer was named Debbie Danilo. One of the keyboardists is named Blair Aronson. Krista was spending a night with Blair Aronson, and they look out the window, and there's Debbie Danilo staring at them from outside because Debbie Danilo was in love with Blair Aronson, and so she was kind of jealous and following them around. That happened the night before Krista
There are
was
so
killed.
many suspects in this thing,
Yes.
and all with a reason to kill her if they were that jealous.
And you can't cross out any of them yet.
No.
Jamie, I want to ask you about it. I said 20 times. I think she was stabbed, correct me if I'm wrong, 33 times. Is that right?
22.
22, sorry.
Yeah.
So some of the wounds inflicted were like passion wounds. I'm no expert, but to me it sounds like a crime of passion. The fact that the wounds were in the upper chest, in the facial area, sounds to me like some like a woman was scorned. You know what I mean? Maybe she was
Sure.
sleeping with a boyfriend or a husband, whatever the case might be. You know what I mean? I would lean towards a woman.
An ear witness that night did say that she heard a man and two women having an argument right before the scream started. So there might have been two people there, but I know what you mean by passion, a crime of passion, because that's the way you express it. But it just always seems so odd to me. What I would say is it was deeply personal. So she had 10 stab wounds to the front. She had 12 on her back. She had wounds on her face that they say might have come from a hammer, or it could have come from them bashing her head on the concrete. Because what happened, what the medical examiner told me, because I tracked him down, she was actually already on the ground, probably from a slice to her jugular that brought her down. And after she was down, the killer stabbed her once on this side of the back, walked around and stabbed her again on the other side of the back. I mean, they took their time in the middle of a residential street in the middle of the night. It took a while.
How was the body placed on the ground? How was it? Was it underneath the vehicle?
Yeah, she was found partially underneath a vehicle that was parked in front of the house, not her own vehicle. And she had her car keys under her chest. And so when they turned her over and found the car keys, they went looking for the car that matched the keys, thinking it belonged to the murder victim. So initially they thought the murder victim was the roommate because it was the roommate's car she was driving.
And they never found a knife?
Never found a knife, never found her purse. And she was said to keep her purse with her at all times because her diary was in her purse.
Wow. Oh. I know such
I'll
a
tell you.
affluent neighborhood in Hollywood, West Hollywood. Very beautiful woman by all accounts. But there were minimal reports in the media. Why do you think that was?
How late in the night was it?
She was found at 1:30. There was a guy who was going to that house to buy drugs. It was a drug house. And he was a limo driver, and he happened upon the body. Initially, he thought it was a hit and run, but he immediately went to the sheriff's office and brought them back to the scene. And then they discovered, no, this is a stab victim. So yeah, it was
Yeah, he had
1:30.
a lot of nerve going to the police department to bring the sheriff to a drug selling house.
Well, and
Why they didn't like him.
the limo driver knocked on the guy's door, Sandy Smith, the guy who owned the house where she was found. He didn't come to the door. The cops tried to knock on the door that night. He didn't come to the door. So the next day, his excuse was he slept. He hadn't slept in days and he was sleeping. He wasn't aware that anything happened outside of his house.
Was there another witness down the street who came out or no? I heard something.
Yes. Yeah. There was a guy named John Grise. John Grise is an actor. He was in Napoleon Dynamite. He was in The White Lotus the last season or so. He was staying in his mother's rental house with his brothers because his dad, Tom Grise, had just passed away. Tom Grise was a great filmmaker who had just made Helter Skelter, the TV movie. And he heard this unbelievable screaming in the middle of the night. So he grabbed his dad's gun, walked out to the sidewalk, looked around, didn't see anything. When police knocked on his door the next day, they told him, look, if you had stepped over the sidewalk into the street, you would have been looking right at her and you probably would have seen the killer. So
Wow.
there were ear witnesses that night, but no eyewitnesses.
Wow.
Gianni, I think we need to make time to make a little money right now.
Okay, we'll be right back.
All right.
And we know where you live, so don't go anywhere.
That's right.
All right, we're back. Well, let's wrap this up. Thank you so much for coming on, man. This is interesting.
Thank
And
you, my friend. Thank you.
as you get new evidence, hopefully, and get a climax for this wild drama, please share it with us.
Yeah, I sure will.
I mean, because there's people out there, I mean, obviously they're in the mid-70s, late 70s, maybe they're not doing good health-wise. Maybe they want to, they know some stuff. How can they get in touch with you?
That's absolutely so crucial. And I'd like to tell people how they can help. There's actually on my website, whokilledkristahelm.com, there's a page there called How You Can Help. And there's a list of things that I'm looking for, resources, access to people. And I'll just give two examples to you. The night before Krista was murdered, in the same area, 5 miles away, there was a girl named Sheila Green. She was stabbed to death as well, up in the hills, and decapitated. When the murders were reported in the newspapers, they matched the two. They connected the two because they happened within 24 hours of each other in the same area. So I called the LAPD because the PD handles Sheila's murder. And they opened the box for me on the phone and they said, hey, there's a list of potential suspects for Sheila's murder in here. So I named some of Krista's suspects and none of them matched. But that was before I knew about David the Pimp, David Marcus. So I've been trying to get back in touch with them. I can't get anybody on the phone, but if anyone has access to LAPD files, I'd like to know if David Marcus's name is in that list of potential suspects, because that would be the connection if so.
Yeah, they can get in touch with Jeannie with us too, with Hollywood Godfather, and I'm sure
Absolutely.
Hollywood Kid. So there's three different outlets. Let's
Yeah.
see how let's see if we can solve this crime
Crack
together.
the case. We're gonna crack the case tonight.
We can do it together, guys. Come on, we're crime fighters.
Yes.
Did you interview the actor there? The guy that came out? Did you get in touch with him? The guy
Who?
with Napoleon Dynamite.
I did talk to him, yes.
Okay.
And he basically has the same story. He just recapped the night and what he heard. He said it sounded like a cat being skinned when he heard screams that night. I've talked to Heidi Fleiss about this case. I mean, I'm just this guy
Heidi.
in
Johnny,
Lakeland,
I was waiting for
Florida,
you. Wait
on
a
the
minute.
phone with
Spelled
Heidi
the name. I'm
Fleiss.
sorry.
Like, what
No,
business do I have talking to Heidi Fleiss?
every time you throw a name out there, I just look for that glint in Gianni's eye, and
Oh,
all of a sudden
Heidi,
it was like,
Heidi.
I've heard that
Yeah,
name.
yeah. First of all, she's not too credible, so don't worry about it.
Right.
Well, she was close to Bernie Kornfeld, and Bernie Kornfeld was close to Krista. Bernie
Let
Kornfeld
me
is a
tell you something about Bernie Kornfeld.
please.
I foreclosed on his house behind Beverly Hills.
Oh, did you?
And I had to go to Switzerland to make him sign the papers
Yep.
because he fled to Switzerland.
You're talking about Gray Hall?
Yep.
Yeah.
I owned that for a while.
Oh, that's cool.
Right next to my Griffin's house.
Another owner of Greyhall. This is an interesting point. I swear I'll shut up after this. Another interesting point about Greyhall. Before Kornfeld, it was owned by George Hamilton, the actor.
I know all about it.
George Hamilton had a three-way encounter with Krista and Patty Collins. And he said during that encounter, which was taped, the cops have the tape, Patty Collins was really controlling. He could tell there was a definite tension between Krista and Patty Collins during that encounter. So George Hamilton's a big part of the case. People like Polanski and
George is a
Nicholson
good
and
friend of mine.
yeah. Oh, is he? Okay.
Yeah, still. I love him.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. I like
Thank
him.
you,
Okay,
George.
tell us,
He's great.
what is Gray Hall? What is Gray Hall? Is that the home?
That was the name of the house.
Okay.
Built by was that one built by Fairbanks?
No.
And it with Mary Pickford, I think.
No, that's down the street.
Oh, okay.
The Pickford house is right below the is south of Sunset.
Okay, because I thought he had built Greyhall, and then he had an underground tunnel that went up to Pickfair, which he built for her.
I don't know any of that.
Yeah.
The reason I got the house, he owed some very close friends of mine the money. And what I did, I went and paid the taxes on the house because when he fled, he was delinquent.
Wow.
I went to the Beverly Hills City Hall, paid the taxes on it, got a quit claim deed on it, went looking for him. And when he saw me in Switzerland, he thought I was there to kill him. I said, "No, I just need your signature."
He had ambitions to be like he Hefner Light.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, another great show. Thank you for being on. We
Thank
thank
you.
you. We're going to
I'm
close
a
out with some personal messages that we need to make, and we appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, my friend.
Let us know if there's any cracks in the case. Come back
Yeah,
on.
I will. I'll credit you guys like crazy in the book. I promise.
Well,
Best of luck to you.
thank
Thanks.
you.
All luck. All right. Thanks for joining us tonight.
All right. Before tuning out, I want to thank, I mean, the people that showed up for me this weekend in Portland, Maine again. I was at the Elks Club, sold out, standing ovations, and sold 200 books afterwards. So I just got to thank everybody, Jim Champy and Robert Baldacci. These are guys that were the organizers of this. And I just, my last ventures took me to Florida, Boston, and there this last weekend. So I thank you all. We thank all our listeners. And as Mike and Jeannie's been saying, send your cards, letters, whatever, S share, subscribe.
On YouTube, it's really big
Yep,
on
please.
YouTube, guys.
Because we've only been on almost 300 hours now. God
Well,
bless
it's
you all.
fantastic.
I thank my co-hosts. And if you want to say any personal messages, please do.
A big shout out to Jose Gama, a buddy
That's
of
what I was going to
Oh, yeah,
say.
man. That's right. That's right. And Jose, I found out you're wearing the crucifix. And if
Oh,
you
thank
don't
you.
know, that crucifix came from Pope John Paul, who's now a saint. And I thought I should give it to you. And I'm sure he'll cure you, believe me.
God bless him.
God bless.
Johnny, you're so wonderful. Hey, thanks everyone for joining us for another great episode of the Hollywood Godfather podcast. Be sure like us, Instagram, Facebook, share us with your friends. And I love your saying, Mike, even your enemies, pass
Yeah.
it around.
Tell your family, tell your friends, tell your enemies.
There you
That's
go.
right.
I got more enemies than friends, so
I
think
owe.
about that. All right, good night. God bless you
Have
all.
a good night.
God bless.
And that was that. But I'll be back.
No regrets, no complaints. Lived a life with no restraints. The little kid they all counted out. Proved them all wrong, that's without a doubt. Laying there with my left side numb. 5 year bout with polio, but yes, I won. From standing on corners like, how many pens you want, to living in a bakery, then opening my own restaurant. course, I had some help along the way. Friends like Frank Costello that I miss each and every day. Things from many years ago still resonate.